Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Elizabeth Lorena, attorney registration 39501, and I plan to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. I represent the intervener Oglala Sioux Tribe. Mother and father, along with their several other children, the full siblings of the child at issue here, are enrolled members or members of our tribe, and they reside on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota. The parents were married on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. Their divorce was decided by the tribal court, and subsequent custody battles between the parents were litigated in the tribal court forum. Here, Ms. Crawford, a non-native, non-relative, filed a petition for allocation of parental responsibilities.
So let me just interrupt you real quickly. You said that both parties reside, or both parents reside on the reservation. Yes. Is there any dispute about, okay, that was my question, any dispute that the parents are both domiciliaries of the reservation?
The issue was raised. The trial court never decided whether or not the parents were domiciled on the reservation. The trial court made the decision without that determination because the trial court said, well, the parents abandoned the child, so their domicile doesn't matter anyway. So that was an open issue where we maintain they're domiciled, but the petitioner objects to that.
Does that affect the relief that you seek from us? What would we do because the court has yet to determine the domiciles of the parents?
This court could remand for a hearing on the issue of the parents' domicile. And if you decide that the parents' domicile is determinative, if they're found to be domiciled on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation, instructions to the trial court, if they found that, to dismiss and transfer to the tribal court.
Sorry for interrupting.
Thank you. Okay, after Ms. Crawford filed her petition, the tribe immediately moved to intervene and made a motion to transfer based on exclusive jurisdiction. The hearing was held, and the trial court made the determination based on the abandonment issue alone, never coming to whether mom and dad were domiciled on Pine Ridge. This court should decide that abandonment has no place in an ICRA case for the purposes of determining jurisdiction. Abandonment should only be considered for the ultimate determination of the fitness of the parents. In the alternative, if this court does determine abandonment should be considered, ICRA demands that any finding of abandonment be done through a native lens. What does the native culture consider abandonment to be? But however, even if you were to apply the traditional abandonment analysis, the parents did not abandon the child here. Jurisdiction is not determined by whether or not a child is abandoned. The ICRA requires that a child's domicile be that of his parents until rights are terminated. The trial court order identified the parents' alleged abandonment as the central issue, and it relied on the Illinois Supreme Court case of In re SS. In that case, the court said if there's abandonment, the mom's domicile is not that of her children. And they remanded to the trial court to say, was this child truly abandoned? But that reasoning should not be adopted here. You know, the Illinois court recognized that a parent cannot intentionally abandon their child off the reservation for adoption. And what is adoption but saying, I don't want to be a parent anymore, I'm abandoning them to the care of another. So the court there reasoned they can't intentionally do that. That would defeat ICRA. Supreme Court in Holyfield said, no, we can't do that. But then the court went on to reason, a parent could do that unintentionally or unwittingly, that could happen, which that reasoning should be rejected by this court. Absent a legal...
You're saying the trial court part?
The Supreme Court of Illinois said,
okay,
if they make that determination, then the domicile would change, even though the parents' rights have yet to be terminated.
Your point is that if there's that sort of intent, we have a sort of an a fortiori relationship then to the kind of intent that was present here, and if there's no abandonment in that situation, then there clearly isn't here.
Right. And I think the Utah Supreme Court case of Holloway is far more persuasive. That case explicitly considered the interplay of abandonment and ICWA's exclusive jurisdiction provisions. The obvious ease, to quote them, the obvious ease with which abandonment law can be used to shift the domicile of a reservation domiciliary's minor child and to thwart the jurisdictional rationale of ICWA could not have been contemplated by Congress, and that's why they rejected that consideration. In the Utah case, mom only lived with the baby for about 6 months. Then she sent the baby to her mother. And then when the baby was about 3, mom gave permission for the aunt to take him off the reservation, placed with the foster family. 2 months later, she consented to the adoption. She later revoked it. And there the court said, doesn't matter. 2 years later, when the Navajo Nation intervened, saying this child is domiciled on our reservation because mom is, even though that child hadn't lived there for about 3 years at that point, that reasoning should be adopted by this court. It's just paradoxical on one hand to say you can put your child out for adoption and that doesn't change domicile. But a parent who goes to a family friend, here, you know, the parents had concern. They knew this woman. They said she's like a grandmother to our children. And they placed the child with her. In their own statements, the mother said, I'm in constant contact with her and my children. I believe they're well taken care of. In her petition for allocation of parental responsibilities, she says, I call the mom 3 to 4 times a week to update her. Where is this, I don't care about my children? Where is the intent that these parents have abandoned this child? It's simply not here. But even if you were to consider abandonment, you still have to look at it through the native lens. ICWA demands that. This court shouldn't consider the restatement of law and apply it in a vacuum. Federal statutory law, which the ICWA is, preempts any common law. The ICWA is a clear congressional statement, a policy for Indian families and tribal sovereignty. A large part of the reasoning of the ICWA was the idea that non-Indians didn't understand that children weren't being abandoned by their families when they left them in the care of others. The Holyfield Court looked to the House reports, and it found one of the chief concerns was non-Indians don't understand the role of the extended family. These non-Indians considered the family irresponsible when they left that child outside the immediate family with a relative or a friend. The Supreme Court again looked to, they quoted Senator Abarth, who pointed out, many testified there's no such thing as an abandoned child in Native culture. It's okay, it's culturally appropriate to leave children with friends and family members. If you can't care for them at that moment, doesn't mean your rights should be terminated. The Montana Supreme Court, with reasoning later adopted by the South Dakota Supreme Court, says we have to use ICWA. We have to use cultural identity as a looking glass. The tribal court would be the most appropriate forum to determine whether the parents here had truly abandoned this child or if they were simply acting as part of native culture. The ICWA recognizes that the tribe has no more vital resource than its children. And that's why the Supreme Court recognized the tribe's interest in the children is on parity with the parents' interest. It's not subservient. Parents and tribe are on par with each other. And that's why the tribal court's the appropriate forum. The tribal court may well decide that Ms. Crawford is the appropriate guardian at this time for these children. They could make that determination, but the tribal court should be the one to make that determination.
We'll ask a question and step back. Ms. Crawford's motion, does it present a custody proceeding? I mean, this would not remove the child from the parent, would it?
It would give her rights that the parent, a custody proceeding if any time a parent cannot have that child returned upon demand. If her petition is granted, she would be given rights that would conflict with the parent's rights. And it is undisputed that this is an ICWA proceeding. They did file the notice because she's saying, recognize my rights to this child in opposition to the parents' rights. They do not have custody, or have not had physical custody for quite some time.
Well, as I understand, what triggered this was that the mother asked to remove the child from that home. Isn't that what triggered the action?
What originally happened was mom and dad had gotten divorced, but for whatever reason, they were down in Denver together, living in a van with their children. It was getting cold, and I don't know how they met Ms. Crawford, but they asked, can we stay with you for a while? And the parents were overwhelmed, and they asked her, can you care for our child? And she said yes, to her credit. And the parents signed papers saying, we want her to care for them for now. And she did that. So they had asked for that.
No, but that situation continued for like 3 years, I think. Mm-hmm. And then I think the mother asked to remove the child. And move the child, and that's what triggered this action. Is that correct?
I believe so. The mother has expressed, she expressed in the trial court, I want my child back. I've been trying for a while. To my knowledge, there was no legal proceeding that she tried or anything
no,
like that.
I understand that. She just contacted.
Yes, and she testified, I want my child back. She's now a student down on the reservation. She's doing well, and she has the other children. He has full siblings living in Pine Ridge that he is being separated from. So quickly, the active efforts requirement of the ICWA cannot be read. You can't excise it from the rest of the act. They did the responsible thing, found someone to care for their children. If this had been the state, there would have been the obligation, and there is the obligation for private parties under ICWA, under NB, to help with visitation, help with transportation. You can't fail to make those active efforts and then hold it against this family that they lacked the resources to come back from Pine Ridge to Denver to visit their child more frequently. And I would like to reserve the remaining time for rebuttal unless the court had any questions right now.
You may.
Thank you.
You have about 3 minutes and 29 seconds.
May it please the court. My name is Anna Dronzek, and under the supervision of Jill Tompkins, registration number 33724, I represent the appellee Constance Crawford.
Counsel, let me stop you right there. This is the first time I've seen a student appearing in argument in the Court of Appeals. Can you tell me the statutory basis or the, what is it that allows a student to appear even under an attorney supervision in our court?
Well, Your Honor, I know that the American Indian Law Clinic at the University of Colorado, through which I'm appearing, has had this happen in the past. We had students argue a case in front of the Court of Appeals in the NB. I don't have the citation directly to hand. And we moved to allow me to appear, and the court granted permission for that.
And I wasn't suggesting you do anything improper. I was just curious about that. So thank you very much.
Your Honors, this appeal comes down to one question. In this particular case, with this particular child, does the Oglala Sioux Tribal Court have exclusive jurisdiction over his custody proceeding? We argue that it does not, for two reasons. First, it would appear that the tribal court does not even have subject matter jurisdiction over this proceeding by operation of tribal law. And second, the Indian Child Welfare Act directs us to look at the child's domicile, and in the present case, the child's domicile is in Denver. This child, now almost a teenager, was born in Denver in 1999. His parents divorced in 2006. About 3.5 years ago, in October 2007, although his mother had been granted legal custody on the reservation, he was living with his father and siblings in a car in Denver. They had no other home, none of the children were in school. The child at issue also suffered from significant medical problems, particularly a birth defect that distorted the bones of his skull, giving him an outsized jaw. He was so self-conscious of this defect that he wouldn't even look people in the face. He would always tuck his chin into his neck to try to hide it. He also wouldn't speak to people. He was so withdrawn that his own father said that he thought the child was retarded. Ms. Crawford, a longtime friend of the family, opened her home and took them in. When, after a couple of weeks, the father still hadn't found a place to live, she asked if she could put the boy in school. The father agreed, and he and the mother each signed powers of attorney, giving Ms. Crawford the power to care for the child. Both parents described Ms. Crawford as like a grandmother to the boy.
Excuse me, counsel. Was mother with the father and the children when they were in the van and they approached Ms. Crawford?
My understanding is that she was not, because we have testimony also that the child hadn't seen the mother since before he came to live with Ms. Crawford. It's a little bit unclear because he's referred to as living, the father is referred to as being in the van with the children and his wife, but it's not really clear whether that is his former wife or a later wife. Unfortunately, the father has not responded to any proceeding, any parts of this proceeding, so we haven't been able to clarify all those things.
Counsel, do you dispute whether mother is domiciled on the reservation?
Yes, we do, Your Honor.
Okay, so you, assuming that we find that the mother's domicile to be a controlling fact, you would agree that we have to remand?
I would agree, because I don't believe we have enough evidence to determine where the mother's domicile actually is based on the trial court's ruling and on the evidentiary hearing.
And would that be the same for the father?
Yes, although technically the father's domicile is not really at issue since they are divorced and the father doesn't have legal custody, the child would take the mother's domicile but not the father's. But we also don't know where the father's domicile is. Today, this child has dramatically changed for the better and is very much like a normal child. No one would imagine he had had the troubles that he had. Ms. Crawford has never received any support for the care she's provided for this child. And as I mentioned, the boy hasn't seen his father since early 2008, nor his mother since before he came to live with Ms. Crawford. Taking these circumstances together, it's proper to find the child's domicile in Denver. The Supreme Court in Holyfield expressed a couple of concerns about children's domicile and how courts should handle that. One concern was that we would have an inconsistent application of the Indian Child Welfare Act if courts used state definitions of domicile to determine where children were domiciled. Parents could potentially manipulate the act by taking children across state lines. However, we don't need to use state law of domicile to find this child domiciled in Denver. Instead, the federal common law of domicile, developed to address the questions for diversity jurisdiction, provides us with a uniform nationwide law under which this child is domiciled in Denver. The case law does not require a minor child to take the same domicile as its parents in every circumstance. Instead, it requires looking at the mosaic of circumstances surrounding the child's care and control. And federal courts have found minor children to be domiciled apart from their parents, even when those parents have legal custody, where there is another person who has care and control of the child, who is providing all the support for the child.
But that's not under ICWA, is it? I mean, you're using analogous situations.
Right. Yes, Your Honor. Those were not Indian Child Welfare Act cases, right, but they were expressions of a federal common law of domicile, which we can turn to when the Indian Child Welfare Act asks us to look at domicile and to figure out what that domicile would be.
Counsel, in determining whether those are analogous, I guess I'd ask you to address this question. It seems to me that in the ICWA cases, one of the concerns that the courts identify is that the tribe itself has an interest. And it seems to me that if that's the case, then the party's ability to control the situation by abandonment, intentional or accidental, would be limited. So would you address that? Why are those cases analogous to this area in light of that additional interest that the courts have identified?
Well, mostly are because they address this concern of inconsistency. That was one of the reasons why the Supreme Court in Holyfield rejected looking at state law of domicile. So
that was one, but not the other.
Not the other. The other argument I would make about the looking at this law of domicile is to argue that finding this child to be domiciled in Denver does not run counter to the purposes of the Indian Child Welfare Act. Now, the Indian Child Welfare Act, obviously, we have no argument with the idea that the parents and the tribe have an equal concern here. However, the act Congress could have determined that all Indian children should be under the exclusive tribal jurisdiction in all cases, and they chose not to do that. They very consciously said it is the child's domicile that determines who will adjudicate his custody proceeding. Domicile is normally understood as a place to which a person is most closely related. So therefore, Congress's choice of domicile as a factor here is its recognition of the role that a relationship to a location has in determining who should adjudicate. That is, we want people to be adjudicated in locations to which they have some kind of relation. Otherwise, we have a lot of concerns. And as I say, ICWA does not require that all Indian children be adjudicated on the reservation of the tribe to which they belong, if they don't have a sufficient tie already to that reservation. So the opposing counsel has cited to the Supreme Court of Utah in the Holloway case, but that case itself does recognize that there is a small group of children for whom state jurisdiction is appropriate. It has stated that, in effect, Congress used the domicile of the child as a basis for distinguishing between those who maintain close ties to the tribe and therefore should be subject to its exclusive control, and those who are sufficiently removed from the tribe and its ways to justify giving jurisdiction over them to non-Indian courts in certain circumstances. SNJC is such a child who is sufficiently removed from the tribe and its ways to justify giving jurisdiction over him to the Denver District Court in this particular circumstance. He was born in Denver. He has lived in Denver with Ms. Crawford for 3.5 years. He lived in Denver with his father for some period before that. He spent very little time on the reservation. Moreover, by saying that he should be domiciled in Denver, we are not arguing that the protections of the Indian Child Welfare Act do not apply. There are many, many protections in that act, and those protections all still apply. The tribe has the right to intervene. Parents have the opportunity to get counsel if they can't afford counsel. There's a higher evidentiary standard required for the proceedings, for the custody proceedings themselves. Those things are all still in place. In this case, with this one child, his particular circumstances, all we're saying is that tribal court jurisdiction is not required to fulfill the purposes that the Indian Child Welfare Act was intended to implement. Therefore, we would argue that finding this child domiciled in Denver presents does not run counter to the purposes of the Indian Child Welfare Act. I'd like to briefly address opposing counsel's argument about active efforts, the contention that Ms. Crawford has failed to engage in active efforts to maintain the Indian family. I'd just like to say that that issue is not really properly before the court at this time, because that goes to the merits of her petition. Whether active efforts have been engaged in is something to address when you're looking at who should actually have custody of the child. In the present case, we're still at the threshold issue of who will adjudicate that. And so while we don't in any way concede that Ms. Crawford has not engaged in active efforts, we believe she has engaged in active efforts, we would contend that that issue is not properly before the court at this time.
The mother violate the tribal court order by allowing Ms. CC to have custody of the child or to care for the child?
Are you referring to the custody order? Well, the custody order, what I remember the custody order was that actually the father was only supposed to have custody of the child with permission of the mother and when he was sober. I would have to explore further the tribal law and look at the order further to be able to say whether giving his custody to Ms. Crawford was any kind of violation, but that would require delving into tribal law, which we've not done at this point.
Okay.
Finally, holding this proceeding in tribal court would create a jurisdictional void, because under the Oglala Sioux Tribal Code, the tribal court lacks subject matter jurisdiction over Ms. Crawford's claim. The tribal code has no allocation of parental responsibilities proceeding as we have in Colorado. That's a creation of Colorado law. And so they have no jurisdiction, no subject matter jurisdiction to address that. The closest analogous sort of child custody claims that they have, we have adoption, foster care, or guardianship. This is not an adoption case because there's no intent or interest in terminating the parental rights. Ms. Crawford would be very happy for the child to continue to maintain a relationship with his parents. She simply wants to have the legal right to give him the care that she has been giving him. This is also not a foster care proceeding. Ms. Crawford is not a licensed foster parent. She's not seeking to become a licensed foster parent. She is concerned with this particular child of longtime friends of her family. Under Colorado law, an allocation of parental responsibilities is not exactly the same thing as a guardianship, but probably the closest Oglala Sioux claim that we can find is a guardianship. However, to be appointed a guardian of a Oglala Sioux minor child, A person must both reside on the reservation and be a member of the tribe, enrolled member of the tribe in good standing. And Ms. Crawford has no ability to fulfill those conditions. Therefore, if this proceeding were to take place in tribal court, there's no claim that Ms. Crawford can bring that would allow her the legal right to provide for the child she has in her care.
Is this issue raised in the trial court?
I don't believe it was addressed explicitly. We would ask the court to take notice of it at this stage. I understand that's at your discretion, of course. Your Honors, this court is charged with making thoughtful decisions and obviously must look to the precedent it will set. However, it is paramount that we don't lose sight of the trees for the forest. We need to remember SMJC and the unique facts of his life. He is domiciled in Denver with a woman who he considers his grandmother and who takes care of him. The tribe itself chose to limit its tribal court's jurisdiction. This court should affirm the district court's ruling to prevent creating a jurisdictional void. This court must consider the legal limbo SMJC will find himself in if the tribal court is found to have exclusive or transfer jurisdiction. Ms. Crawford did the right thing in taking this child in October 2007, and she's continued to try to do the right thing by seeking legal authority to provide him with that care. Where else can she turn if she can't go to the Denver District Court? Nowhere. Thank you, Your Honors.
The question, though, is, does the Denver District Court have jurisdiction, right? That's the issue. And I think we all agree that CC has done a wonderful job and has no selfish interest. But the question is jurisdiction.
Yes, Your Honor. And we hold his domicile is in Denver, and therefore the trial court correctly ruled that he had that jurisdiction may be in this court. Thank you.
Thank you. To quickly address a question you had for the appellee, on page 6 of the appellee's brief, it states that the mother was living in the van with the father. It refers specifically to her. Whether or not the subject matter jurisdiction of the tribal court is being raised for the first time. So we would, of course, if that would be an issue, want the opportunity to brief. But it doesn't really matter. There's no exception in the ICWA to exclusive jurisdiction in case some non-native woman wants to go to the tribal court and gain custody of this child. I mean, keep in mind, she is last on the list. In the state court, the preferences are immediate family, extended family, Oglala tribal members, native tribal members, and then anyone else, if there's good cause to deviate from those preferences. And ICWA is really being thwarted here, and it is being attacked, because in the brief they say he's had no contact with the reservation. He's had no contact with tribal members. He was in her care and custody that whole time. When we're in state court proceedings, that state makes sure the foster family is encouraging cultural ties. What has been done that whole time? He's been divorced from his tribe. We were never notified. If you look in Holloway, there was a real intent there. They made sure that Navajo DSS never heard about what was going on with this family because they didn't want them coming in. Back in 2007, nobody ever called the tribe and said, hey, you've got a family down in Denver. They need some help. No one ever gave the tribe the opportunity to intervene. They raise in their brief, well, the tribe didn't give any relatives and no one stepped forward. Nobody notified the tribe. If she had actually initiated these proceedings 3 years ago, this family would be better off. The tribe would have received notification. The tribe could have moved to transfer then. They could have participated. They could have given names of family members. And this family would still be better off if she had notified the state. They are holding this family's poverty against them. They didn't abandon this child on a street corner. They found someone that they thought was a family friend to care for this child. Well, she's poor and they're poor. And no one notified the tribe and no one notified the state to help bridge that gap, arranging visitation. None of that was done. In her testimony, she said she never encouraged him to call his parents because that wasn't his job. less active efforts making that connection between the parents and the family to keep that Indian family together. She hasn't done anything to keep this Indian family together. We cannot forget, he does have ties to the reservation. He may have been born in Denver. His parents were married on the reservation. They were divorced on the reservation. The tribal court decided custody between them. His family lives there. His mother goes to a tribal college. The record doesn't say how long exactly he lived on the reservation, but there are significant ties. And furthermore, this court has already rejected the existing Indian family doctrine. We don't look at, are they Indian enough to apply? He has a connection to this reservation, and that tribal court has already taken care over that family. That tribal court order at issue says he can't leave without mom's permission or our permission. The dad can't take him off the reservation.
So, would it be clear that the tribe would lack exclusive jurisdiction here if the parents moved away from the reservation?
If they moved away with no intent to return, domicile is about a state of mind.
I understand.
So as long as they intended to return, which happens all the time on Pine Ridge, they leave for housing, they leave for jobs. And South Dakota Supreme Court says when a tribal member leaves the reservation to get a job or to find housing or to go to school, that doesn't change his or her domicile so long as they intend to return. They clearly left, but if they intended to return, their domicile and thus their child is Pine Ridge.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you. And thank you both, counsel, for excellent arguments. The case is submitted and a decision will be forthcoming in due course.